the shores of El Pacifico, Phil Hendry.
Hey, welcome to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news talk and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about. And we are broadcasting here from the El Pacifico every night until 10 o'clock on the West Coast and, 1 o'clock on the West Coast and 4 a.m. on the East Coast. If you're watching Phil TV in HD and you're wondering what that cluster of lights is on the horizon behind us, that is an oil platform. Can they see that, bud?
Yeah, move the microphone.
There, I've just moved the mic stand. You guys can see it's a oil platform out in the Santa Barbara Channel, and it's something that I'm personally very proud of. I mean, it's nothing I've ever done, but as a Californian and as a lover of the environment, but also as a lover of business, that is an oil rig that drills for oil, and in that channel, while that oil rig is drilling for oil, is some of the most abundant marine mammal sea life in the world, from whales to sea lions to seals. And every time I bring this up, I always get an email or a tweet from an environmentalist really angry at me for mentioning it, because that's not the way it was supposed to be. It was supposed to be like this. Oil rig means oil leak, means dead fish and dead animals and just this Armageddon of sea life. And if you take a boat out across that channel and you're on your way to the Channel Islands, and you go past that oil platform, oftentimes in one of the funnier scenes out of nature, you'll see the sea lions lollygagging and laying on the platform. You know, they're hanging out there, they're resting, they're doing whatever they do, because they go between the coast here and the islands. That's the regular sea lion run. So it is a perfect, marriage of man's needs technologically, and also his concern for the environment. And like I said, the Marine Mammal Act protects this channel, and every winter we see the Pacific gray whales going north and south. Almost year-round, we've got sea lions that are going back and forth between the Channel Islands and the coast here. And every time I bring it up, I got somebody telling me, some environmentalist who so desperately wanted a massive oil leak. I mean, I don't know how anybody could want something like that.
You tell me they really want something like that?
Well, no, they don't want it, but it's almost like they do, you know? It's like, why can't I say that? Isn't that a nice thing to say? Isn't it cool to say, like, we got all these sea lions, and yet we're still drilling for oil? And cats are all just, yeah, you're always saying that, Hendry. What? God, don't be such a grump, man. Sorry the world didn't turn out the way you said it would. You know, sorry that it, solar power and all that other bull crap just ain't making it, you know? Sorry. What did I just hear from, Jimmy Pardo, the wonderful comic with Never Not Funny, and we just did his podcast, and Jimmy's a great guy. Guess what he just did? He just ripped out all the stupid solar lights that he's got in his yard, and he's put in good old electrical lights. You know why? Because the solar lights don't work. And he's sick and tired of having to, you know, do something with these things. I'm sure that there's some that do, but anyway, welcome to the program here. Our number on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show each and every night is 877-876-7445. 877-876-Phil is the number. All right, here is the news tonight, and Larry Grover stands by from Conservatives of Kern County to talk a little bit about this. The word is from NBC that the new running mate that will be named by Mitt Romney is Paul Ryan. Paul Ryan, he is the young congressman who is, he's adequately described as one of the young lions there in the Congress. Paul Ryan, in an editorial opinion of the Boston Globe as recently as yesterday, Ryan deserves serious consideration. Well, guess what? It is Ryan. He's 42 years of age. He's the chairman of the House Budget Committee. He, according to some, satisfies the main requirement for being vice president, a readiness to assume the presidency. His foreign policy knowledge hasn't been tested. Despite 14 years in Congress, he hasn't had to withstand the relentless vetting that goes into a presidential campaign. But Ryan has distinguished himself as a politician with real convictions. Larry Grover joins us on our newsmaker line tonight from Conservatives of Kern County. He's in Culver City. Larry, what are your feelings on this?
Well, first of all, I'd say to you, Phil, congratulations to Paul Ryan. I think it's always an honor to be chosen as a running mate for a presidential campaign. Having said that, I don't want to put water on the fire of hope that some Republicans may be feeling, but some conservatives maybe less so. But nonetheless, This is an announcement. It's an announcement that comes almost as if to say, you know, the party's ending, but guess what? Another keg of beer arrived. You know, it's. I think it's too little, too late. And I read the comments that you were mentioning in the pre-show about Mike Murphy saying, you know, don't panic, but maybe panic a little. I the handwriting is on the wall on this, and I'm bitterly disappointed. And
you're not disappointed in the selection of Ryan.
Well, I'm not. It's either here or there. I mean, okay, Ryan got picked. That's great. I don't know. I would have preferred Rubio, but it doesn't matter. And that's the thing that I think we need to face. As Republicans and conservatives, it isn't going to matter. And I never in my wildest dreams ever thought that we'd be looking at this point in the campaign and we'd be expecting to lose. But that's exactly what I think is going to happen. And
so it doesn't. So this campaign and this vice presidential announcement.
Yeah, this announcement doesn't make any difference. I'm sure it's as I said, it's a feather in the cap of Paul Ryan. I guess there's the people that support him, and he's a nice enough guy. Like I said, I would have preferred Rubio, but at this point, it doesn't make any difference. I'll take anybody if it was going to assure a win by Mitt Romney, but it won't. And
well, maybe what we ought to talk about then is what happened. You know,
well, what happened was this. What happened, two things happened that no one expected. I certainly didn't. One of them is that Obama has not alienated the American electorate like many people expected that he would. He has not alienated the American electorate to the extent that he is, you know, the disaster that a lot of, you know, that I thought he would be. And I still think he's a disaster. But what's happened is the American people have not kept pace with the perception, which I think is accurate, of conservatives and the Republican Party. Now, you know, please understand what I'm saying.
But what you're saying is the American people are not as intelligent?
No, just listen to what I'm saying.
Isn't that what you're saying? You say their perception has not kept pace?
But listen to what I'm saying. Yes, it's true that there are those of us in the Republican Party and the conservatives. We just happen to know what's going on in this country a lot better than the rank-and-file American voter. And what we hope for is, as the years go by, we keep educating people, and then they will say, okay, well, I'm going to vote for Romney because it's obvious Obama's a disaster. And they just haven't, you know, they're just not smart enough. They're just not smart enough.
Okay, so that's a tough point of view to try to, isn't that that's a difficult thing to try to sell to people?
You know, it is. It absolutely is. But I don't know what else I can do. I've just got to say it. They're just not smart enough to keep pace with what it is that I and other Republicans and conservatives know. And I'm very disappointed. And I'll tell you one other thing. I take it as personally as I did anything.
By the way, we're talking about Larry Grover. Hold on, Larry. Larry Grover with us from the Conservatives of Kern County. The American voter is just not as smart as Republicans and conservatives.
Well, you know, they're not. And I can't look at it any other way. I can't be dishonest about it. And I feel the way I did way back in high school. If you take yourself back, Phil, when you were in high school, and you remember there was that one girl that went out with the guys, and it was, you know, you know, I don't mean any disrespect to any of the ladies listening, but there was always that one girl that you were pretty well assured was you were going to end the evening. You could have come home feeling a little bit like you got something out of it.
A loose girl?
If you want, and I'm not endorsing, I'm just telling you, when you're 16 years old, this is what you hope. And when you go out with her, all the guys were able to, you know, blank, blank, and you come home and nothing. And you really feel it doesn't get much worse than that. And that's how I feel about this presidential campaign. Like, if I could just be graphic, like you go out with a town slut, excuse me for saying this, and you...
Well, it's not a very good comparison.
Okay, let me just finish the...
No, that's not a very good comparison. You know, I mean, the town slut. You know, we're talking about a presidential election here. How do you... In other words, this was a shoe-in?
It was a shoe-in, yeah. And to come home from a date with a girl that every single guy in town was able to connect with, if you understand, if you, you know what I mean, right?
When I say, yes, I understand what you mean.
All right. And you come home and you haven't got, I don't know how else to say it. You're smelling your fingers. You're
okay, Larry, I get it, and I don't think it's very appropriate.
Well, you know.
Hi, Phil. This is Gloria.
Oh, hold on. I want to. Yeah, Gloria, how are you?
Yeah, Larry, he's telling the truth. He came home from a date with, the girl's name was Terry, Tennille Duffy. She was the, you know, the daughter of a pretty prominent man in town. Janine, was that her name?
Mother, I don't want to talk about
that. Okay, I don't. Yeah, let's not talk about that.
And he was. He was smelling his thing.
I don't want to talk about that. Would you please clean it up, Larry?
All right, I'm sorry, but how do you feel when you go out on a date with the town?
I've never been out on a date with the town slut. I never expected anything more than whatever it is that I got. I never angled for anything like that. And
oh, yeah, right.
Look, Larry, I didn't go out on a date expecting anything. I never dated a girl based on that, okay? In fact, in high school, I spent most of my time just, you know, sitting home alone or going out with my buddies on a Friday night. It was, you know, I was not exactly, I didn't have my own car.
Yeah, okay, and so you can relate to that kind of frustration, so why aren't you angry?
Because it's got nothing to do with, that's completely unrelated. We'll be right back. I got to take a break, okay? We're talking to Larry Grover. So Mitt Romney is done.
Mitt Romney is not going to be elected president because the American people do not have the brains to see what we've been trying to show them for 4 years and the humiliation of this.
All right, we'll take a break here.
It's terrible.
All right, we'll let's 877-876-7445. That's an unfortunate comparison. Romney, even with the selection of Paul Ryan, is done. There's no Republican victory. It is it is an interesting point of view or perception, at least on the part of not only of Larry but others, that after 4 years of Obama, the Republican Party has not been able to sway the American people toward the Republican ticket. 877-876-7445. It's the world-famous Phil Henry Show. I'll be right back.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
I don't want to talk about it. It is the world-famous Phil Henry Show from Culver City. Tonight is Larry Grover, and I wanted you to get your mother, Gloria, back up on the line, Larry.
All right, she's on the other end, right? Mother?
Hi, Phil.
Hi. All right, Mrs. Grover, you know, let's talk about this. You, when Larry was in high school, and we're talking about Mitt Romney and his run for the presidency, and your son Larry has brought up as a comparison here, a date he had with this young lady.
I don't know why she needs to talk about this.
Because I know her name, Larry. It was a girl by the name of Janine Wheeler. It was not a girl by the name of Duffy. It was a Janine Wheeler.
All right.
And Larry had said to some of his buddies that he was going out with Janine Wheeler, and everyone knew that Janine Wheeler was a very, as you said, a very loose girl. And even Larry had said that to me.
I don't, why would I say that to you?
Because you would oftentimes share these things with me. It was after Dad died. And you didn't have a man to talk to about it.
So there's nothing wrong with that, Larry.
I don't remember telling my mother. What did I do?
You said you had a date, Larry, with this girl who was, I don't know what the word you used, but you said you had a pretty good chance of scoring.
Yeah, right. You're going to tell me that I said I had a chance of scoring.
Larry, you were frustrated, and I said, go for it, remember?
Okay, all right, Larry, whether you told your mother that she has a memory of it, would she have a memory of it if it didn't happen?
Well, you know, I remember her saying go for it, but I didn't know it had to do with...
I told you, go for it. I said, spread your wings and head for the stars, you know. And
I don't remember that, but,
Well, you know the story.
Yeah, I went out with this girl, and the reason why I brought up this young lady Wheeler, you're right, that was her name, is because I'm talking about the frustration of thinking you've got a sure thing and coming home and you're laying awake and you're sweating and you're thinking, I'm never going to get this phone answered. I'm never getting this phone answered.
I know, because I heard you pounding on the walls and talking to yourself that night. And I remember laughing a little bit.
That was the night you were laughing. All right. And she gave me blueberry pudding. And I remember...
No, it was blueberry pie.
Blueberry pie. And I said, this is delicious, Mom. I've never known you to make blueberry pie. And she's like, ha, ha, ha. And I finally got the joke with the blue.
Yeah.
You know, I want to say something to you, Mrs. Grover. You have the most unusual relationship with your son.
Tell me about it.
Hold on for a minute.
Why do you say?
Well, you talk in ways that only a man would talk to a son.
Because I had to be a father to Larry. When his father died at Dodger Stadium, did we ever tell you the story about this?
I think it's on our podcast today.
No, my father died of a heart attack at Dodger Stadium because that was where he loved to be. He loved to go and see the Dodger. And
all the Dodgers, it's plural.
All right, I'm not a baseball fan. I thought it was the L.A. Dodgers.
No, it's the Dodgers. Oh, this is the kind of kid that I had to live with. And
all right, Mother, it's the Dodgers. But my father died of a heart attack at Dodger Stadium, and I said to Mother that at least my father died in a place that made him happy. And what did you say?
I told Larry the truth. He hated the guts out of that pain because of the heartbreak, you know.
Well, it was a love-hate.
No, he hated the living guts of every Dodger that ever walked.
And yet he went to the games.
Yes, he went. He wanted them to win, but he knew that they wouldn't. And he hated the guts. He hated the living guts of every Dodger, even going back to when they were called something else. I forget, the Brooklyn were they ever called the Bums?
That was a nickname for them in the 50s. They were the Dodgers all the way back to the turn of the century, I think.
He hated anything that walked or crawled called a Dodger.
I find that hard to believe.
Larry, I was married to the man. You were a snot-nosed brat, something that we tried to keep from getting crushed by an automobile. That's all you were. We just tried to keep you alive, Larry. You were a little snot-nosed, tow-headed boy that we tried at least to keep you from being crushed by an automobile.
Why? I don't know what any of that means, but the point that I'm...
Oh, you don't know what any of that means, huh?
All right, well, Mrs. Grover, I think we got the story. And the story is Larry had this date with this loose girl. Were you expecting him to have sex?
I was hoping for it, Phil, because Larry was frustrated. He had begun pacing. He had begun walking around with his hands in his pockets. And I can tell...
Oh, Mother, this was Dr. Berenger talked about this.
I'm going to tell Phil about it. Larry walked around, Phil, with his hands shoved really deep in his pockets. And you could see that he didn't just have...
Mother, please!
Larry, shut up. I'm talking to Mr. Hendry.
Ah!
And you could see that his hands weren't just in his pockets, but he was fiddling, that they were moving. And I said, Larry, stop that. So I finally took him to Dr. Berenger, and Dr. Berenger said, either this boy has some kind of a sexual experience, and this is what the doctor said, or you're going to have to cut holes in those pockets. And
that's when my mother started calling me Larry Joyhole Rover, and she would say that she would she
you did you, that's what you called your son
as a joke, Phil.
No, she'd call up the school and say, would you please ask Larry Joyhole Grover to call his mother. And the whole school, they'd have the auditorium, they'd have the PA and the teacher, and we have an announcement, Larry Joyhole Grover, please call your mother.
So you did this to humiliate your son?
No, I did it to get him to stop fiddling. That's all.
All right, well, we're really, really far away from talking about the presidential campaign.
Yeah, there you go, bingo. Right there, Mom. I want to talk about the campaign, Mother. Could you get off the phone, please?
Well, Mr. Hendricks,
could you get off the phone, please? Could you get off the phone, please? I'm just going to keep on interrupting you.
Then I'm going to keep asking Mr. Hendricks.
Get off the phone, please. Get off the phone, please.
All right, goodbye.
Mr.
877-876-PHIL. We'll be back with Larry, and we'll try to steer this back toward the presidential election and Mitt Romney's fading hopes. In a moment here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show, Larry Joyful Grover.
Phil Hendry.
Would Larry Joyful Grover please call his mother?
World-famous Phil Hendry Show.
And welcome back here to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. 877-876-7445. With me is Larry Grover. His mother, Gloria, was on the line. We're going to talk a little bit here with Larry, though. And I know that that was rather embarrassing. I don't know why we needed to go through that.
You know, as long as you're entertaining my mother's, I hate to put it this way, but if you're going to entertain my mother's ravings,
Well, she had some information on this girl. You're the guy that brought up this girl, Wheeler or whatever, Duffy?
Janine, yeah. Because, Phil, the reason why I do that, and I'd like to do it without my mother's running commentary, is to say that this election, this campaign with Mitt Romney at the wheel has been much like that date, in anticipation of going out on that date and coming home
Why the comparison to a sexual encounter?
Because the frustration level is the same. I'm trying to connect with you, and I'm trying to connect with your audience. You go out on a date with a girl, you think every other guy in town had a wonderful time with her, and they told you the things that they done. Or that they did, and you go out and you're thinking, for once in my life, maybe for the first time in my life, I'm going to come home and, you know, I may not wash my right hand.
Come on, will you, Larry? We got an audience of people who want to talk politics here.
Well, I'm sorry, but this is what has been done to this country. I didn't do it. This was done to this country by a Republican Party that didn't prepare for this election.
I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about you. I may not wash my right hand.
Well, that was... Do you understand? Boy, you don't even... You don't even know. You know, I...
Are you hearing him? Larry, your voice is going... Ooh.
Oh, would you get off the other end before I do something I'm going to regret for the very rest of my life?
I have never...
Larry, you got to calm down.
I've calm, but I can't...
I've never been spoken to like.
Hey, get off the phone, will you, Mother? Please.
Okay.
Oh, here she goes. Yeah, see, now it's begun.
Let's just forget it, okay? Just go on.
I was going to say that I did not create this election environment of frustration and anticipation that will not be fulfilled. The Republican leadership did with this guy Romney, who then went out there and stumbled his way through this campaign.
Yeah, I agree.
That's your mother.
Well, who else do you think? You gonna stop it, Mother?
All right.
Are you gonna stop it, Mother?
Larry, just...
No. Don't say it, Phil, because I've been putting up with this.
What did I do?
If you don't stop it, Mother...
Oh, God.
All right, forget it. The next time you talk to me, I'll be at a police precinct headquarters. Good night.
Oh, God, get him back on the phone.
I don't know, Ben.
Get him back on the phone.
What do you think you're going to do?
I don't know, but I...
I don't know.
Do whatever I got to do.
I'll do what I have to do.
What's going on there, bud?
Oh, just when I'm on the line.
It really hurt, Mother.
You want to come at me? You go come at me.
All right. Well, I can't even talk about it. I don't even want to go there. All right. I don't know what happened there, but it sounded like there was.
Yeah, it sounded to me like there's some kind of altercation.
I think it's an altercation.
Yeah, that's what it sounds like to me, an altercation. What I'm trying to find out here is she's not hurt, is she?
Well, I'm calling back.
Yeah. Yeah, Larry, you got what? All right.
Larry.
Yeah.
Okay, so what happened, man?
What happened? I got off the phone. I went over to talk to Mother, and she wanted to know if a hinge was broken on the door. And I said, what hinge? I stuck my hand in there to look at it, and she slammed the door in my hand.
Your mother slammed the door on your hand?
Yeah, now she's retreated into her room with the TV remote. I'm telling you, most of the time I can deal with it.
I just want to know something. Your mother, you and her were yelling at each other. You got off the phone.
Yeah, I just got off the phone. I was tired of talking with her in the background, and I went over there. And she said,
what did you go over to where?
I went over to where she was, and I had my hands out like...
Like what?
Like I was going to go for her throat, but I was kidding, okay? I was kidding. I swear to God, I was kidding. And that's when she said, could you check and see if that hinge is loose before you do whatever you're going to do? So naturally, like an idiot, I did. And that's when she closed the door on my hand, grabbed the remote, which I had in my belt, and took off.
You know, you live in the weirdest house in the history of the world, man.
Well, now, wait a minute, Phil.
No, you do. You live in the weirdest house in the history of this planet.
Mr. Henry,
No, you got a mother there that is calling you all kinds of names. She knows more about your sex life than you do. You aren't apparently bright enough to know when she's about to slam a door on your hand. She grabs the remote out of your belt. What the hell you're keeping it there for?
I keep the remote tucked in my pants because I don't have a utility. What do you want me to do with it?
How about hold it in your hand?
Yeah, but you're getting up and you're going into the kitchen for things to eat and getting a refreshment. And
okay, so you take the remote and you slide it in your pants.
Yeah, and that's when Mother grabbed it. And it slid down, and that's another thing. I can have her prosecuted, can't I?
No, you know, I don't even want to talk about it. 877-876-7445. We're talking about Larry Grover here on the world-famous Phil Henry Show. I'm going to go over to R.C. in Altadena. R.C., you're on the Phil Henry Show with Larry Grover. Go ahead.
I've pulled up before on your program. I think I talked to you, Mr. Grover. How are you doing?
Yeah, I'm fine.
Well, I'm a freshman at Bradley Military Academy. I don't know if you're familiar.
I know the Military Academy in Altadena.
Yes, sir.
Yeah, I know it.
Have you been up there?
We've gone up there and we've done some presentations for the young cadets. Very, very fine school.
Well, I wanted to tell you that most of the cadets here, being of the military influence and being from that background, we was going to vote for Mitt Romney until Obama went and he got bin Laden, and now we want to vote for Obama.
Why would you let that influence, and I know you're not old enough to vote, but are you talking in terms of your support? Why would you let that influence you?
Well, because that's really what we cared about getting Osama bin Laden, and he did it. So, and then when I heard you talking to your mother and how she had her hand in your pants and slammed the door in your hand and everything, it just sounds really, you know, you don't sound like the kind of guy that really has it together. And that, you know.
Well, you know, that's my mother. I'm not running for president.
Yeah, I know, but I mean, it still sounded pretty stupid, especially when your mom is talking about the girl that you're going out on a date with. And we just think it's a very bad impression that you're giving everybody, and we don't think it's anything that you know, you're not representing the conservatism the way that it ought to be represented.
Well, you know, young man, let me say this. I'm not running for president. Mitt Romney is. My mother, my mother is my mother,
Yeah, but what are you talking about this stuff? Why are we even talking about your personal sex life?
Yeah, you were talking about getting the handful, and you didn't even, and you wasn't even able to do that.
All right, let's not talk about that.
No, I know, Mr. Henry, but he wouldn't.
Because I couldn't get a handful doesn't mean I'm not going to make... All right, you don't want me to talk about it.
No, I don't want you to talk about it, okay?
Yeah, but it does show a level of inability on his part. And that's what that's the thing that concerns us the most. That if you say you're going to go grab, I'll only say it one more time. If you're going to go ahead and get a handful and put a smile on your face by sunup, then you really have to You know, go for it.
Young man, it wasn't for the lack of trying, okay?
With the town slut? Anybody could do...
I don't like the idea...
Okay, we're done with this conversation.
Well, I just want to say a big shout-out to...
877-876-7445 to Phil Hendry Show. Larry Grover on the line with us here from Conservatives of Kern County talking about Mitt Romney's fading chances. And when I say fading chances, I mean you're saying that his chances have faded.
I'm saying that this guy, it's over. And I want to bring this. That young man is trying to blame Romney for my failure. That's not fair. But I would also go so far as to say, just because I come home from a date with as he said it, the town slut.
And you said it that way, too.
All right, I said it. Just because I come home from a date with a town slut, and I'm not a few pounds lighter, if you take my meaning.
No, I don't, and I don't want you to explain it.
You don't know what I mean, but you don't want me to explain it.
That's right.
Well,
just go ahead. Keep going.
Jesus. All right. That doesn't make me incompetent. That doesn't make me an incompetent, and that does not make me an individual that cannot analyze the political scene. I see what's happening. I see what's happening to this country.
Oh, Larry, shut up.
Oh, you came out of the bedroom? Can I have the TV remote, please?
All right, I don't want to hear you arguing with her.
Here.
Ow! She threw it right at my chin.
877-876-7445. The Phil Hendry Show. Margaret Gray on the line from Culver City doing a lot of Olympic reporting, or rather from Santa Monica doing a lot of Olympic reporting. Margaret, you had something to say to Larry, though.
I do, and here is what I have to say to Larry. I think it is a wonderful thing, Larry, that President Barack Obama is going to have a second term. I don't think that it is something to worry about or anything for us to be overly concerned with. I am glad that Romney is going to lose. I think you need to mend your bridges with your mother. I think you need serious psychological counseling. And I honestly believe that there is a bit of a physical abuse going on both sides. Do you understand? You are abusing her. She just threw the TV remote at your crotch, if I'm not mistaken. Is that correct?
That is exactly what she did.
All right. Then there is obviously the need for intercession on the part of the authorities for both of you. For both of you. And that's what I would recommend. And I say, President Obama, God bless you. And I am looking forward to a second Obama term. Thank you.
All right, can I respond to what you're saying?
She's gone.
That's the second. When I brought up the young lady in high school and I came home and I'm looking at my right hand. Now that's the second time that's happened to me, that woman hanging up on me. If I've got something to say... And my ex-wife used to do that, and then she walks out of the room.
Larry, you live a life of frustration, most of it at the hands of females who are smarter than you, who know all the buttons to push, and who are successful, okay?
Why is it every time I call your show, I'm getting my head shrunk?
Because you need your head shrunk.
Yeah, but you're not a head shrinker.
No, and I don't want to be a head shrinker, but you cast me in the role of that every time you call a show. I'm dealing with your mother, dealing with issues you got going back to your wife, your kids, this, that. Now I'm hearing about your high school years and your right hand. 877-876-7445. We'll be back here. I thought we were talking about Romney. I thought we were talking about Paul Ryan. We're talking about some girl named Janine and Larry's high school years and the remote that he keeps in his pants. The world famous... Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The
Not
Phil Hendry
anymore.
Show. This is the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
I don't care.
That one lady was going to agree with me.
I don't care if she was going to agree. She was stupid.
Well, you say she was stupid.
Let me just fill the people in. We got some people calling, one of whom was a woman who said that Obama was a Muslim. Right away, you're dealing with that.
Well, Phil, he's dealing with what?
You want to know why the conservatives are going to lose this election? Because of the segment of them that believed in the whole birther thing, because of the segment of them that concentrated on is he a Muslim, because they allowed that stupid element of their political movement to control a lot of the dialogue, and that sunk as far as I'm concerned, was one of the things that sunk Republicans and conservatives in the eyes of the mainstream of American voters. They don't want to be aligned with idiots.
Why do you call that stupid?
Oh, come on, will you, Larry? That freaking birther thing, the reason why people keep bringing that up, conservatives, is because they don't have the brains to argue about the very economy that they say is being threatened. They haven't got the brains to argue about the national health care plan. Every time they try to, they get their legs cut out from underneath them, so they got to go to the birther thing, or they got to go to the Muslim thing. And after a while, people are not stupid. You know, the rank and file American people see this, and they go, well, they're not answering any questions. They're not giving us any answers. They say Obama's this and that, but what have they got?
So you're telling me that we got a gun that's got empty chambers in it, and I'm telling you that isn't true.
All right, give me some of what it is that the Republicans have to offer.
We have to offer the low taxes.
And how is that going to help? You know, we had the tax cuts. We had low taxes. It didn't stop people on Wall Street and from the banks and from the mortgage companies. It didn't stop them from committing the financial institutions of this country to individuals that were deadbeats, that couldn't come up with money on loans, that couldn't come up with the way to take care of assets that they supposedly owned. They dumped all this stuff back in the laps of the banks. What has that got to do with tax cuts?
If you cut the taxes, then the people that are good are way better, you know.
He was going to say gooder, weren't you, Larry?
Would you shut up, mother?
But you get her off the phone, will you?
Mr. Henry doesn't want you on the phone.
He does, but he doesn't.
So in other words, Larry, what you're telling me is cut the taxes and a magical group of people will appear who are way better than the ones who had tax cuts before. These are business people that are going to do what? You know, the very people that were signing these people to these bad loans, the very people that were signing these people to these mortgages, that were the very people that were doing this kind of business, these people were big business people. These people were people benefiting from tax cuts. These people had successful businesses. It didn't keep them from doing business in a harmful way.
Well, you look, Obama, all he's done is saddle us with the biggest debt that we have ever had.
Yeah, he saddled us with a big debt. You know, Ronald Reagan was a deficit spender, too.
Ronald Reagan didn't, you know.
By the way, I hate to tell you this, but there was a very interesting chart that was making the rounds showing Obama's rate of federal spending to be much lower than any president since Reagan, or actually since Carter, in terms of the percentage of increase. Reagan was a huge deficit spender.
Yeah, but Ronald Reagan could do that because of the economy was way back. Look, if I had my choice, I'd vote for Ronald Reagan. But he's dead. And if he were alive, he had Alzheimer's disease, so that wouldn't be, I wouldn't do that. But I would want him. That's who I want, you see. And
really? That's nice, because Reagan's dead.
I know he's dead, but that is who I would prefer. And
well, you don't have him anymore. We had him for 8 years.
I understand that, Mr. Henry.
So you'd want a guy like him?
I'd want a guy like him. There you go. I'd want a guy like him.
Why isn't Romney like him?
Because Romney is not. He's, first of all, the thing about Romney, as you know, he's more of a liberal. You know, you know, you've got me at a disadvantage here. You're asking me about. I didn't do my homework. You know, I didn't think I had to come in here and defend this guy. I realize that Romney is no good.
Well, I don't know that Romney is no good. I'm not. What I'm telling you is the following thing, and you're just going to have to accept this. The Republicans, the conservatives, whatever the hell you want to call them, had an opportunity, or so they told the rest of the American people, that Obama was going to destroy this country. He was going to destroy this economy in such a way that would be so convincing and so cataclysmic that we would have no choice but to vote for the Republican candidate in the next election. That it would be as clear as the nose on your face.
And it is.
Is it? You got people in your own party now who haven't given Mitt Romney a snowball's chance in hell to win this election. You got people now who are saying that Obama is going to be the independent choice like he was back in 08. You have people now saying that compared to Romney, Obama is Ronald Reagan in terms of public confidence.
Yeah, look, Obama's his approval rating is no good.
Whatever, man, but I'm just, it isn't really about Obama. It's how bad you guys have dropped the ball. Now, you're telling me that you have, I asked you to defend or at least to give me the Republican Party's view on this economy and what they would do. Talk about tax cuts, right?
Yeah, extend the Bush-era tax cuts, and that puts more money deep into the pocket of the... And look at, see, Mother...
When you talk about going deep into the pocket, Larry, look...
Boy, I'll tell you, now she's got me thinking about those days when I was a young kid.
Joy hole. What they should call it, Phil, is the joy hole.
Get the phone, will you?
All right, Mrs. Grover, it's not helping, okay?
Hey, Mr. Henry said it's not helping. Mother said that you want to call it the joy hole economy? All right, let's call it the joy hole economy, where we cut a hole in our pocket and the money runs out. That's Obama. That's not me.
No, that was you.
All right, you know, the answer is you can't answer it, and I don't blame you, because there is no easy answer. And but one thing is very clear. One thing is very, very clear. Romney and the Republicans have failed to capture the confidence, the imagination, whatever you want to call it, of the American voter. They have failed, and I thought it was, according to them, it was going to be a slam dunk.
You know, Mr. Henry, it's a long way to Tipperary, my friend, otherwise known as November. I forgot when the election is.
November the 8th. I'm only kidding. Hey, what's the date?
Never mind. Thank you, Larry Grover. Ted Bell coming up next. Long way to Tipperary. World famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Welcome back here on the Phil Hendry Show, 877-876-7445. We were just looking here at the 4x400 relay because the South African team is anchored, their fourth runner is anchored by that young man who has the prosthetic legs you were looking at there, bud.
Yeah, that's pretty weird looking.
They're strange looking, but it blows me away that a man can lose his limbs, be a double amputee, and still be running in the Olympics. And there he is, and they actually caught a shot of him.
But don't that make him run faster?
Yeah, like in the Bionic Man.
No, it don't make him the Bionic Man, for God's sake. If anything, it's a, you know, to be running on legs like that is so unusual. How could you ever say that it's an unfair advantage? But just my hat's off to the guy. And that's a beautiful thing. Anyway, it looks to me like the Bahamians won. Are those the guys in the blue?
Oh, well, that powder blue is gay.
Yeah. Whatever, man. Is that Bahamas? I think it is. All right. Anyway, welcome back to the program, folks. Ted Bell is on the line with us, and we're going to be talking with Ted here this hour about a possible confrontation he's going to have with the health board. We'll find out what that's about here in this segment of our program with Ted Bell.
Ted's a Beverly Hills Steakhouse. Come on down.
Everybody, this is Ted Bell, and by the way, I heartily echo Phil Hendry's sentiments there watching this race. It was absolutely heart-stopping, I guess, to see that young man run the race, Phil.
That was something, isn't it?
I got to tell you, you know, you can go through life and you can be a very negative person and you can be a very, I don't know, cynical person, but when you see a young guy like this running in the Olympics, Phil, on prosthetic limbs, and it's amazing. It's just amazing.
Those are two, that's an invention, a kind of a prosthetic that whoever came up with that, and they're just a couple of metal, they look like just a couple of metal supports, don't they?
Yeah, it looks like something that you could pull off of a garage door and make. You know?
Yeah, Mr. Bell, that's what I thought.
What'd he say?
He said, that's, Bud, he said that's what he thought.
All right, that's what you thought, but now people are going to think.
People are going to think what?
That I got the idea from him, so.
Bud, could you clear that up?
Yeah, I didn't get, Mr. Bell, I didn't tell him about it till just now.
Yeah, so I said what I said before you said what you said.
Yes, sir.
All right, but the point that I'm making is that it looks like the legs that boy is running on looks like something that you could take a garage door spring, or you could take like the frame of a mattress, or, you know what I'm saying, or just a car. You could take an automobile that you find in the desert that's rusted out, and you could break it apart. It could make legs for a guy. So at this point, though, the more I talk about it, maybe it isn't such a big deal. I don't know.
No, it's a very big deal, I think.
Yeah, but if you can make something like that out of a garage door spring.
Yeah, but who's going to think to make that out of a garage door spring? Who? This is invented, this was created and developed by people who are devoted to finding solutions and answers for people who are missing their limbs, who by, either by disease or injury have lost their limbs. So it's a very specific kind of science.
Well, yeah, but if it's a specific kind of science, which I don't doubt that it is, Phil, but if it's a specific kind of science, don't you think that they'd come up with something that's a bit more inventive than, oh, I know what I'll do. I'll just break down my garage door and saw. You see what I'm saying?
And I don't think anybody did that, Ted.
You don't?
No, I don't think anyone said, oh, this is easy. Let me just bust out the springs on my garage door. No, I think that you sit and you analyze. It's about mechanics. It's about kinesiology. You know,
well, now you're getting into those 45. Now you get into those 45 cent to 50 cent words there. Okay? One more nickel, and I won't even speak the English language. But you know what you're talking about, Phil. So, yeah, no, I think it's fantastic.
All right, tell me about the you have had
kinesiology. Hold on, Ben. Look up kinesiology, Benny. Would you? Kinesiology.
Yeah, it's the science of movement.
Oh well, the science of movement. All right, talking to Phil Hendry. You know, I did mention to you, I just said it to Bud, and I've said it to you off the air, making me look like I don't know what's going on. You know about that, right?
Well, I didn't think that's what... I apologize.
Yeah, see, that we talked about that. Anyway, all right, too late now. God, how many times...
All right, Ted, I apologize. I forgot that that was part of the...
Yes.
Part of the... All right, ladies and gentlemen, why don't you get Mr. Hall, because I know...
Yeah, no.
I got to talk to David now, you know.
Yeah, I understand that. Can we keep talking?
Go ahead.
I wanted to ask you about, the challenge you're having from the health board. You got him?
Yeah, Mr. Hall on too.
Okay, let me get David Hall on the line here. David, I made a mistake. David, are you there?
Yeah, David Hall.
David, I made a mistake. Ted Bell is with us.
Hey, Ted, how you doing?
Well, I was doing fine until, what happened?
I violated one of the terms of our deal with Ted. I said something that made him look not intelligent.
What did you do? Well, he said kinesiology. Do you know what that is? I don't have any idea. So he brought that word out, and I tried to make it, I tried to do the best I could with it. I said, oh, Phil's got his 50-cent words working. But I realized that it was pretty blatant, so I went ahead and told Bud to call you. So you know that we've got to refund him now 20% on his airtime purchase.
Yes.
So you know that costs us money.
Yes.
So why did you say kinesiology?
It just came out.
What was the text? What was the context? I thought I'd like Phil to tell me.
The context was we were talking about the guy in the Olympics who is a young man in the Olympics for South Africa.
Yeah, the kid with the no legs?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
And we were talking about the prosthetic legs that he has, and I was talking with Ted, who said that you could make those legs out of garage door springs.
Are you laughing? Yeah, he found it funny. I'm saying something that I want the audience to hear and be impressed with me by it, and he's there going,
And I didn't say that, Ted.
Well, I knew, but that's what you're doing, and right now you are. You see what I'm saying? What's the point? What is the point? Phil, every time you come on this program and you talk about something with a sponsor, you should make the sponsor look good. In Ted's case, he's got a signed deal with us that demands that. If you don't, we get penalized.
I understand.
What are you laughing at? What are you laughing at?
When Ted said that you could make two legs out of a garage door spring, I just...
So you look down your nose at Ted Bell, a man that started his own business,
right?
A guy that has created a multi-million dollar steakhouse. You're looking down your nose at him.
No, I'm not.
Then what are you laughing? So you thought it was funny?
I thought it was funny because that's what a guy like me does.
If I see a man that doesn't have any legs, what do? Do I go to school and study kinesiology or whatever the hell that? It sounds to me like a word he made up. I'm gonna have somebody look it up. Don't worry.
I didn't make it up.
Well, am I going to go to school and have that? Am I going to go to school and... I'll tell you what Ted Bell does. This is what Ted Bell does, all right? And I want everybody out there listening to me and listen good. If I see a guy that doesn't have legs, Do I go to school and waste somebody else's money and scholarship, blah, blah, boom, boom, ding, ding? No. What I do is I go to my garage door, I take it down, I saw up the springs, I bust up the metal, and I start thinking right then and there how I can make that guy some legs. I'm not fooling around with kinesiology or whatever it is Henry's talking about. That's what Ted Bell does, see? Not what Phil Henry does. You'd go to school, wouldn't you, Phil? Wouldn't you?
Well, I mean...
What's your answer?
I guess if I wanted to go into that kind of science, making prosthetic limbs, I guess I'd feel I had to go to school yet.
Yeah, not me, not Ted Bell. I don't do that. I don't fool around and I don't waste time while a guy is crawling along a roadway. You understand? See, the difference between you and me, Phil, is you would watch a man crawl on a road, crawling, pulling himself forward by his hands, the rest of his body worthless and useless, and with the legs of his pants dragging behind him because he's got no legs. That's what you'd see. That's what would happen if you ran the world. If Ted Bell runs the world, there's a guy running in the Olympics. I think it's worth listening to, Phil.
Yes, sir. You're right. I mean, you're right. You got to get, you know, we need to solve these problems. And
yeah, solve the problems. Don't run around. Oh, look at my degree. I went to this school, that school. You know, all the degree. You know how many times I've used a degree to wipe with? Can I just? No, go ahead, Ted. I want to tell you a story. A lot of people come into this restaurant and they want to work in the business side of it. They want to do purchasing. They want to do advertising. They want to do marketing. And each one of them has a college degree. Do you know what I do with those?
Well,
go ahead.
You wipe with them.
That's right. That's right. I said, oh, thank you. You got a college? Yeah. Okay, let me take that because guess what? We just ran out of toilet paper. I'm going to go in and I'm going to wipe with it. That's what I think of your college degree. What I want to know is what can that guy do for me right now? Mr. Bell is a very accomplished man, Phil. You got to listen to him.
Yes, sir. I'm listening.
All right. And a guy comes into my restaurant. I'm Ted Bell. And I say to the guy, I got a guy here with no legs. Now, what are you going to do? Oh, well, I'm going to go to school. No. Then when the guy comes in and says, I just busted down my garage door, and I got a bed frame, and I took apart a guy's car, and I made some legs out of it, I'll say, you're hired. Even if I go outside and I see that it's my car that he took apart. Literally, if I go outside and I see my car, taken apart, in 100 different pieces on the driveway, wherever the hell I got it parked. If a guy's got legs, I buy a new car. I don't care. That's selflessness, Phil.
Yes, it is.
That is, and that's why we are proud to have Mr. Bell as a sponsor.
Well, I apologize, sir, for...
That's all right. You know, mistakes happen, okay? But stakes don't just happen. It takes a Ted Bell to make a steak. Mistakes... That's what they serve at Ruth's Chris. Mistakes. I serve steaks. I'm Ted Bell. Taking a break?
Yeah, we'll take a break. All right.
All right, Phil?
Yes, sir.
All right. Okay.
We'll be back with... we'll be back right after this. 877-876-7445, world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
I mean, you're saying it publicly.
Yeah, that's right.
All right, Ted Bell with us here. Ted's in Beverly Hills, where they serve steaks, not mistakes, and they want to put their meat in your mouth.
That's right.
Anyway, welcome back to the program. Ted, now, the question is, and I don't know how much of a tussle this is with the health department, but you're expecting a visit.
Well, let me tell you, I am not expecting a visit. We are in negotiation right now. This is a situation that has nothing really to do, and I think everyone knows this, it really has nothing whatever to do with the way we do business in our kitchen. Our kitchen is an A rating. Our restaurant is the A rating here in Los Angeles County. As you know, Phil, people are familiar with the health code in the city of Los Angeles. You get an A through an F, and we've been an A all the way along. Now, what happened was this. I've got a very good friend at the Chamber of Commerce by the name of Bill LaPlante. Bill comes in with his family and has been coming in with his family for the last 3 years. He's a terrific guy. I know his wife, Susan. And I know his two sons, and they're both great kids. The younger son, Paul, is at 9 years of age, and he reminds me a lot of myself when I was his age. I was the same kind of kid. I'm very curious. I was always talking to people, it didn't matter how old they were. And I like that about Paul. He's a good young boy. And I've had conversations with him, and sometimes, you know, as children will, he gets out of line. He had ordered a pizza, and this was, I'll tell you when it was. It was last May. The family came in on a Saturday night, and Bill and his wife, I think they had the porterhouse for two, and I think the other son might have had, I think he had a hamburger or something. The youngest one, Paul, the one I'm talking about,
okay,
wanted one of our pizzas, our personal, what we call the personal Ted pizza. And if you get the personalized Ted as opposed to just the Ted deep dish, or what we call Ted's long or Ted's deep one, then you get more toppings. So he orders, he wanted to take it deep with Ted. I think, is that number three? Yeah, it's called Take It Deep with Ted.
And what is Take It Deep with Ted?
That's a deep dish. That is not the small personal pizza. The kid says, I want to take it deep with Ted. And I said, okay. And he said, but I want it personal size. This is a kid. You understand? Kid's talking to me like this.
So this is the little boy, Paul.
This is the little 9-year-old, yeah.
All right. Well, you said he's a very talkative lad.
Oh, yeah. He's very talkative. But at some point, you're talking to an adult. And I got a little put out with him. I said, Paul, if you want to take it deep with Ted... He said, well, I want a deep dish. I said, right, but you're supposed to order it the way it says on the menu. It's called Take It Deep with Ted. I said, now say it again. And he goes, I want a deep dish, and I want it personal. I said, boy, you're blowing it. I gave him one more shot. I said...
Now, are you telling me you've got to order when you order?
When you order at my restaurant, you've been to Ted's, right?
Yeah, I've been to your restaurant. I didn't know that.
Yes, everything you order at my restaurant, you have to say it the way it's on the menu. You get the porterhouse.
Right.
And that's what it's called in the menu. It's called the porterhouse. However, if you get a deep dish pizza at my restaurant, it's called Take It Deep with Ted.
So you insist that people order it off of the menu?
Yes. And it's not unusual.
If I don't, then...
Then if you don't, then it's like the waitress didn't even hear you. You could say, give me a deep dish, and she'll stare at you, and they are instructed to stare at you. And I shouldn't have said this in the initial, the manual. I said, stare at them as if they're mongoloid. I don't mean that. I didn't mean that. I meant to stare at them as if, you're seeing something that isn't. I wanted them to give the customer the impression that they are almost invisible. Like, what the waitress is seeing in front of them is either a gelatinous, you understand what I'm saying? Just a mass of gelatin or...
No, I don't understand what you're saying. No, I don't. What are you talking about?
I'm talking about... Do I got to get Hall back on here?
No, what are you going to get Hall back on for? I'm asking you a very simple question. And the question is, when they order something at your restaurant, if they don't order it the way it says it on the menu, and now you're telling me something...
I've trained them to look at you as if you're a gelatinous mass.
As if I'm a gelatinous mass?
Yeah, not you, but just...
Okay, no. In other words, I'm something horrible?
Something they don't recognize.
All right, so in other words, you don't even acknowledge the existence...
Here he goes again with the laugh. Boy, I tell you are really pushing it tonight.
Ted, come on, man.
What?
That's funnier than hell. Yeah, I'd like a deep dish, and she's staring at me as if I'm a gelatinous mass.
As if you're something that suddenly she doesn't have to talk to you, but she's not sure if she has to go and get a manager to have it taken out. Oh, boy.
Oh, come on, man. All right, so what happened?
What happened with what?
When the kid came in.
I told you, the kid said, I want a deep dish. I said, boy. I said, Paul, you got to tell me, do you want to take a deep with Ted? He goes, yeah, but it sounds gay, is what he said. And I said, okay, you know, that. And he said, you know, Mr. Bell, you know what I want. Just go get it. Now, this kid's 9, and he's talking to an adult like this.
Well, he feels empowered because of his father.
Yeah, his old man is at the Chamber of Commerce, and his father and I are very good friends. And I probably, in many ways, I probably encourage that kind of talk because I've always been very familiar with the kids. They call me Ted. You know, usually I like them to call me Mr. Bell, but whatever, you know. And so the kid almost, I swear to God, Phil, if the kid would have snapped his fingers, I don't know, I might have just come right out of my skin. But he almost snapped his fingers and said, now, go ahead, boy, you know. And
no, he didn't do that, though.
No, but he almost did.
Well, how do you know that you're not, all right, I don't want to go there.
Yeah, please don't go there, no, because I know what I'm talking about.
All right, so the kid wanted a deep dish pizza. He didn't order it the right way. He finally said, you know, go get it. Did you go get it?
Yeah, we went ahead, and I told him that we didn't make them personal size, but I went ahead, and I had the chef make a personal size, take it deep with Ted. That's the one and only time we've ever done that. Never have I ever done that before. And I got a newsflash for you. I'll never do it again either. For what it cost me personally, I'll never do that again. I made a big mistake. All right. So now I'm thinking about this kid. You got a break?
Yeah, we got to go to a break. Hold on. We'll be right back. Ted's in Beverly Hills. Ted is with us as he talks about a health code or at least a health department visit he's expecting because of a run-in with the son of a friend of his and a regular customer. What's that about? We'll find out. We come back. 877-876-PHIL, the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
You're clear so far, right?
Yeah.
Phil Hendry. Famous Phil Hendry Show.
Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse. Come on down.
Hey, come down to Ted's of Beverly Hills. And let me tell you something right now, folks. We have the Olympics on right now. They're doing the bicycle riding. I don't know what this is, but they're out on bikes or something. You can come and look at this. Or, you know, whatever they got on TV. That looks very interesting to me.
It's called a BMX.
What is it?
It's the BMX.
Well, it looks like something that my kid does.
Yeah, it's based upon it's really based upon these little Stingray bikes that came out that gradually got modified a little bit, and these kids started doing jumps, you know, and...
Is this something that the kids did that didn't have a license to drive?
It might have started that way. It might have started with kids who were too young to ride motorcycles, but it's turned into a full-fledged Olympic event. And these guys are all in their 20s, you know.
They're in their 20s?
Yeah.
They don't look like they're much older than 15.
No, they're adult men and women competing in this.
Well, that's something that I don't know as a tax-paying American. If I want to support an Olympic team that's got full-grown men and women out running around down the street on their bicycles like they're going down to get a soda pop and a lemon pie or something.
Well, you're not supporting Diddley Squat. What are you talking about?
Ain't this the text? Or is Oh, that's right. It's sponsored.
Yeah, this is all the Olympic Training Center. All right.
Who does that? Coors?
That's the Coors Olympic Training Center.
Well, I bet you the gays don't like that, huh?
I don't know, Ted. Can we get back to what we were talking about?
Yeah, right.
All right, so we're talking with Ted here about the health. What is the problem? You were talking to this little boy who was... being offensive?
Yeah, I'm talking to Bill's son, and the kid said, give me a deep dish. I said, now, Paul, you know, at Ted's of Beverly Hills, you have to order everything with Ted in mind, which is what we say. Remember, when you order, keep Ted in mind. And that means order it the way it is on the menu. So he said to me, and he answered me in a really smart-ass way. He said, yeah, just, you know, I didn't like it. So anyway, he said, just give me a deep dish. I said, you got to order it, taking it deep with Ted. He goes, it sounds gay. I said, oh, boy. So that's when I went back to the kitchen.
All right.
I had to make up a small deep dish, like a personalized size deep dish. I said, take it deep with Ted. All right. But make it short. So they give me this thing, and I couldn't resist it. And I'm saying this to you honestly, and I said it to Bill. I spit into it. And
oh, boy.
I didn't hock one up. I just went like that. It was just saliva. And
You did this why?
Well, it's a normal instinct. If you're serving food, it's not normal, but people don't do it. But the instinct is to want to spit into the guy's food.
And you went ahead and did it. You didn't resist the temptation.
No, I did not.
Why?
Because I own the restaurant. I own the restaurant. It's not like it's some waiter or some waitress. It's me, Ted Bell. I own the restaurant. So I spit into the kid's pizza. Now, as it turns out, LaPlante's wife was walking by, going to the ladies' room, and saw this. She kept quiet about it until the next day I get a call from Bill, and he says to me, my wife said she saw you spitting into Paul's pizza. And I said, that's right. And he said, well, I'm going to go to the health department, and I'm going to see if they can't shut you down for a few days while I investigate. I said, you and what army? You know, Bill, as well as I do, that I'm wired in with the health people. I own a restaurant. He said, well, we'll see. So that's where it is. You know.
And she didn't say anything?
No, she didn't. She went back to the table, and as Bill tells me, she kept her mouth shut because she just wanted the night to play out. And I said to him, why? And he said she was probably weighing the options.
So this is the mother of the boy.
Yeah.
And she went ahead and let the kid eat the pizza. She didn't say anything until...
until they got home. And then she said, you know, I got a surprise for you. I saw Mr. Bell spit into your... I think Paul was there, too, the kid. She said, I saw Mr. Bell spit into your pizza. And that's when Paul, you know, he said, what happened?
All right, 877-876-7445, the Phil Henry Show. Do we have Mr. LaPlante on the phone? Let me talk to Bill LaPlante. Mr. LaPlante is a member of the Chamber of Commerce and has the LaPlante Supply Store there in West Los Angeles. Bill, how are you doing?
Very good, thank you.
And Bill, you've known Ted for a long time.
How are you doing, Bill? Ted, how are you? Yeah, I've known him since we're in high school together.
I can't hear you?
Since we're in high school together. Yeah, we went to high school together. We went to Manual Arts.
Okay. Can you tell me, Bill, did you hear Ted describe the events of the evening?
Yeah, he did. When Paul came to the table and my son sat down to have his pizza, his mother came and she sat down, his mother came and sat down. Paul was already there. They delivered the pizza. And his mother elbowed me, and she made, with her eyes, a motion toward Paul's pizza. And I looked at her, and she smiled, and she went back to her food. So that's her tipping you off. No, wait a minute. I knew that she wanted me to know that there was something wrong with his food.
But she didn't say anything.
She did not say anything, no. All she did was she sat down, she elbowed me, looked at me, then looked at Paul's pizza, and then smiled and went back to her food. She smiled. Well, she smiled, which could have meant a lot of things. I took it to mean that we got you. But what does that mean, we got you? I took it to mean when she smiled, it meant that now we've got Ted Bell dead to rights.
Well, is Mr. Bell somebody that you've been looking to get dead to rights?
I've considered Ted to be a friend, but I have always felt that there are some suspect business practices. I'll tell you, that hurts. I got to tell you, that really hurts. That's right, Ted, but that's how I feel. And when she smiled at me and pointed to the food, then we knew that we probably had something.
Well, what about your son? What about Paul? The fact that he was going to eat something that might have been contaminated or otherwise trifled with?
That is a decision you make as a parent. If you've got a choice between that, which is probably nothing very threatening, I don't think Ted was going to put poison in there, or an opportunity to take some guy down a notch, we went ahead and rolled the dice and went with the... Yeah, you went with trying to take me down a notch, and your son, God knows what's going to happen to him. Well, it's your spit, you know. All right, no, but it could have been something else. Well, what were you going to do, put razor blades in it? I don't know. You know?
You know, this is very bizarre, Ted. What were you going to put in it?
I'm just saying the decision that they made
decision we made was to let the evening play out so that we would have the leverage against you. And yeah, in the meantime, your son is biting into a pizza that I just went ahead and drooled in. I just went, do you know what I did? You said you spit. I'm assuming it was like that. Yeah, it was, but then I drooled a little bit. So I went, and then I went, I don't know how to do it. You know, I can't describe it.
No, we don't need for you to describe it, okay?
I know. Are you saying that you let it puddle up in your mouth and just went, like? Yeah, like that. No, we knew that. We knew that because that's when Sherry came back to the table and she elbowed me and she eyed the pizza. She made a motion like she was spitting up. She went, I don't know how to say this, but if I can say it, Mr. Henry, it was like she was vomiting into a napkin. And,
oh, God.
All right, so you guys knew exactly what had happened and you didn't say anything because you wanted to nail me with a health department beef. Is that it?
I went into your restaurant that night, Ted, not expecting anything to happen.
No, you guys went in, and your wife, and as soon as you saw your opportunity, you decided you're going to nail me with the health department.
The point here, if I may, Bill, is that you didn't say anything to your son. You let him eat this pizza, knowing full well that Ted had done something. I can't believe I'm talking to adults, you know?
Mr. Henry, I'm not the one that drooled. I'm not the one that drooled into the pizza.
When I said I drooled into the... But that's the whole thing. I drooled into the pizza and you let your kid eat it.
What are you doing drooling into pizza in the first place?
Very good point. Oh, so I'm on the defensive. So I'm the guy that's going to take the fall.
You're the guy that did... This is a 9-year-old boy. You got so angry at him that you drooled all over his pizza before you gave it to him?
The kid had not ordered keeping Ted in mind.
That's another thing. I think that is a business practice. I don't think you can actually enforce that.
What?
You can't make me order a meal at your restaurant keeping Ted in mind, because some of the names of these meals, Mr. Henry, I think are beyond...
Well, give me an example.
No, you're taking that out of context.
There's some that are beyond the pale, especially if you're with a family, like the Big Bone, and you're supposed to order it. Give me the Big Bone. And
what's wrong with that?
I can tell you there's probably not a lot wrong with it when it's a man ordering it, but when my wife, who happens to like those ribs, and you have to order it that way, Mr. Henry, you have to say, I want Ted's Big... Okay?
Jesus, Ted, don't you understand you have female customers, you have children?
Wait. Whoa. What's wrong with that?
You know full well what's wrong with it. You're the guy who has said over and over and over again that we want to put our meat in your mouth.
Oh, yeah, he's made that speech to me, too. That it didn't mean anything.
And it doesn't mean anything. It means exactly what it's supposed to mean, which is we want to serve you a delicious steak.
So why would you have people say, gimme Ted's Big Bone?
That's what it's called. That's the name of the meal. It's a big Saint. It's the St. Louis prime rib. Or not prime rib. It's the big St. Louis spare rib. Okay, and we put it in a big thing of chili. It's delicious. You have the chili, and then you stick the bone right in there, you know?
Yeah, and you can't order it unless you say, I want you to stick Ted's Big Bone in there.
That's when you get the chili. If you don't get the chili, you don't have to say that.
No, you just have to say, I want Ted's Big Bone. Either way, it's an offensive way of having to order it.
Well, I'll tell you something, sir. I that's the way I've been doing business. And
all of a sudden, I'm sir, huh?
Yeah, you're going to stick the health department on me, yeah. And when your son said to me, I want a deep dish pizza, I said, I want to take it deep with Ted. And he said, oh, that's gay. I said, okay, that's it. All bets are off. I went back into the kitchen after all the years that I've served your family, and I went a little, you know, it was a little bit of drool, that's all. And you can ask Ernesto. He was standing right there, and he watched me do it.
All right, take a break here.
God, man.
It's a nauseating conversation. And like I said, I can't believe that I've got grown adults talking this way with me. I want Ted's Big Bone. Stick it in there. You know, and what was the other one?
Take it deep?
Yeah, take it deep with Ted. All right, we'll be back. Phil Henry Show, 877-876-PHIL.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Henry Show.
I know it's not here anymore.
You're the guy that comes into my room.
877-8776. Phil here with Ted Bell from Ted's of Beverly Hills, and we're talking about a health code scare at his restaurant.
Ted's of Beverly Hills Steakhouse. Come on down.
Are you there, Bill?
I'm right here, yeah.
All right, well, there's not going to be any health code scare.
I'm going to have you closed down for a couple days.
Yeah, have me closed down after I've said
here
I...
Here at Ted's, we want to put our meat in your mouth.
All right, do you guys understand that this conversation we're having is about as juvenile as can be?
What part of my conversation is juvenile?
Your wife...
Hold on, Ted. Mr. LaPlante, you said when your wife came back to the table, she'd already seen Ted drool onto this pizza. She didn't say anything because she wanted him to go ahead, your son to go ahead and eat this thing so that you guys would have something to hang over his head.
Right, well, that was a judgment call that we made.
Okay. But what's with this elbowing you and looking and pretending like she's spitting up into the napkin?
Well, that's just a code that we have. If somebody's fooled around with the food and we know it, we can give a code to each other.
Why not just tell each other?
In case we want to keep the information to ourselves. It's amazing to me I have to explain this.
I don't understand why you didn't say something to her either, you know, or she didn't say something to you either.
Well, you're the guy that was going to come out on the short end here anyway.
See, the first of all, Ted, I can't believe you did what you did. All right?
It is. I apologized for it a million different ways, and LaPlante still wants to hang me by the you-know-whats, okay?
Which, by the way, is something else. You said that in front of my wife.
I said what in front of your wife?
You said all I want to do is hang you by the N-word.
All right. So?
And my son was sitting there?
Well, you know, things have gotten ugly between us,
Well, so this is a political fight. Is that what it is?
I think it is. I think,
Mr. Henry, I was in the man's restaurant to eat. I didn't know that he was going to spit or...
I didn't say I spit. I said I loogied.
And, all right, you said you loogied, but that means that's phlegm. That doesn't mean it's saliva.
All right, look, guys, can we use adult terms here?
I'm using an adult term.
No, you're not. You're using a kid term. The point is you readily admit you ought to lose your license.
That's what I think, too.
Well, it's not going to happen. You're not going to take Ted Bell's license away. And I'll tell you something else. You should teach your kids some manners.
My son has manners.
No, you ought to teach your kids some manners so that when I say you order off the menu the way you're supposed to order, take it deep with Ted, he's going to say that, not, hey, you, get me it. You understand, Phil, we're talking about an 8-year-old kid?
What did he say?
My son said that he was polite.
Hold on. No, I'll tell you what he said. He said, hey, you, I want a deep dish, I want it personalized size, and I want it now. And I said, boy, you when you got up this morning, you made a mistake. And that's where it all went bad with us. And
you know, I backed away, and so did my wife.
You backed away, and so did your wife?
Yeah.
Of course.
Why?
Well, because I could see something was brewing.
Between a 9-year-old and an adult man, and you backed away? What's to back away from?
Bill, in this sense, I got to agree with Bill. You know,
whoa. Bill, why did you back away?
Because something was going to happen, and I didn't want to be in the middle of it. And Sherry didn't want to either. We backed up, and we just watched, you know.
And you watched it just come down between your 9-year-old son, Paul, and Ted Bell.
You're trying to make it sound like I'm some son of a... What are you saying?
I don't understand how it is that an argument between a 9-year-old boy and an adult man was not somehow the subject of some intercession by the parents of that child backing away like it's a bar fight.
Well, Phil, you don't know my son, Paul. You just don't know.
Now, Phil, you've got to do a little reading before you start talking that way.
Reading? What reading? All right, 877-876-7445. Let's go to Ernesto. Hi, Ernesto. You're on the Phil Henry Show. Go ahead.
Hey, Phil, how are you?
Good.
I want to know, Mr. Bell, now I've heard you on this program before. You were saying that in your restaurant, you're Ted Bell, this and that, right? And that's what I say, and that's what it is. You're saying you're Ted Bell and this and that. Now, this little boy said that he wanted to have a pizza, and you said he didn't order the pizza right, so you took it back, and you said you spit into this pizza or something, right?
Yes, sir, that's what I said I did.
Now, as far as, like what Mr. Henry said, that was the first mistake, you know. And then I listened more, and you say you loogied. So, if it was me,
I would have, you know, well, let me guess. You would have come back to the kitchen and beat my ass.
Yes, sir, I would have. If it was me, that's what I would have done.
Well, you know, this is Bill LaPlante, sir. What's your name?
My name is Ernesto.
Ernesto, that was my son, and I, of course, am the one who's going to make the ultimate decision as to what is going to happen in defense of my son. I felt I had an opportunity to get the restaurant closed down, so I took the chance of having my son eat the pizza that had been,
Had been loogied on?
Yes, sir, that's right.
Okay, well, I mean, that, to me, that sounds like the most childish thing I've ever heard in my life.
Absolutely.
And I hope they do shut your restaurant down, Mr. Bell, but I also hope the health board take into consideration what you did, sir, which was to entrap this man.
I didn't entrap anybody. It was my wife who came back and gave me the high sign not to do anything.
Yeah, what does that mean, your wife gave you the high sign?
Well, Ted, as far as I'm concerned, you got nothing to say in this.
Why?
Because you're the guy that precipitated all of this with spitting.
Yeah, with the loogie into the pizza, you know?
Well, you guys are using the word loogie interchangeably with spit.
Hey, man, whatever you did, it was all wrong. You, Mr. LaPlante, using this as an opportunity to get some political points. So you're gonna. What are you gonna do now?
I'm not getting political points.
You said you gave your wife a high sign. You didn't say anything to your son. You just let it play out.
Look, even if we said something to our son, hey, there's spit in your pizza. I still could have had. I could have done what I wanted to do. You know.
So then, why did you let the boy eat the pizza?
Because it wasn't really gonna contaminate anything. I didn't think, unless Ted's got rabies, you know, which I hope not.
You hope not. Okay. Yeah, you're right. I don't have rabies.
All right. As it is right now, we'll go before the health board. We'll get his restaurant closed down so we have a thorough investigation. And we'll see what comes up with that, you know.
Yeah, and it's nice to know, Bill, that you take all your orders from your wife.
No, not like you. You know, I know you got to call home. You got to call home like 5 times a night, don't you?
No, that wasn't with my wife. It was my girlfriend. Never mind. You know.
Your girlfriend.
Well, you know what? It's none of his business. And I'll tell you something else. If you come into my restaurant with your family again...
And I'm never going to be coming into your restaurant again.
Well, that's good news for me.
Fine.
So that's it, huh?
Yeah, that's it. I mean, look, the kid knows that when he...
Never. It doesn't matter, Ted. We're not going to be back in your restaurant.
Well, when the kid turns 18 and he inevitably comes back into my restaurant because he's going to want to take it deep.
You know, my kid's not taking it deep with you.
Uh-huh. You know, famous last words.
All right. Thank you very much, gentlemen. If your kid comes back into the restaurant and wants to take it deep. All right. We'll be back on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Coming up, it is our News and Information Hour right after these messages.
I wanted to get a word in for my supply business.
Phil Hendry.
Welcome to the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. Every night till 1 o'clock on the West Coast, 4 a.m. on the East Coast, the news, talk, and entertainment show that knows what it's talking about, and we go places other talk shows wish they could, but they can't. In fact, calling this a talk show makes me sick to my stomach because it's got nothing in common with what you would probably think of as a talk show. And, you know, you may agree, and in point of fact, you may not even like what we do, although you're still listening, so what's that about? Anyway.
Yeah, that's how I tell people, too.
Fine, bud, fine. Let's not get too deep into that. We are online at philhendryshow.com. That's the online home, the worldwide headquarters of the Phil Hendry Show. That's philhendryshow.com. We have podcasts that we drop 3 times a week. We've got our daily podcast and all of our archives for our subscribers. We have our daily video cast and our video archive for our subscribers. We have our news feed for our subscribers. We have our comment section for our subscribers. We have our video archives. We have miscellaneous media for our subscribers. So if you want a taste of our show for free, and that is the archives, I should say, you can go to philhendryradio.com, and that's also where you find our podcast. All right. Now, we were talking here. By the way, the music that those of you who are listening to our Phil TV feed, the music we play is, it's, I guess they used to use the word eclectic, you know. I mean, I remember back in 1980, I was hanging out with friends of mine, and we would put together music, like mixtapes back then, where we went from the B-52s into Frank Sinatra. So this whole Jack FM thing, you can take that, Jack. Hit the road, Jack. Which, by the way, congratulations to Jack FM here in Los Angeles, which went off the air. Boy, that was a really good run you guys had. If you had really half the imagination you claim to have, you'd still be on the air.
Yeah, well, Deb Day had Kiki D.
Yeah, look, going from you know, it's not that eclectic, man, going from, I don't know, Black Sabbath into Kiki D, whatever. All right. The Olympics are happening. They're happening and they're happening, man. If they ain't happening, they're happening Sunday. The London Games will be ending on Sunday. It looks like the United States, after initial scare that we might fall prey to the communist nation of China, it hasn't happened. We have more medals. We rule. We're godlike. Even in a country of 1 billion people, or however many they have now, 1.5 billion, maybe they're approaching 2 billion, even in a country with that many people, going up against our little United States of America, we kicked their ass when it came to the Olympics. Now, what's that about?
Yeah, but they're communists. They almost beat us.
I don't care. Proof positive that American exceptionalism... I actually do believe in all this stuff. It sounds like I'm full of it, but I do believe in that. I honest to God do. I believe it's an exceptional country. I don't think the people sometimes in this country are all that exceptional, but, you know, it changes from time to time. Now, what we were spending a good part of the program talking about was Governor Romney and his running mate, Paul Ryan. And that's fine, and I'm sure that it's going to, quote-unquote, energize the base or whatever it is that they call it, but unless something big happens for Romney, I don't know what it can be. And I'm not even saying that what he said in Europe about the security setup in London not being all that great or any misstep that he might have had in Europe. I'm not saying any of that stuff is necessarily what killed him. What killed the Romney campaign, and believe me when I tell you, it's dead.
Yeah, remember what you said, though, about Giuliani and everything.
I made that prediction about Giuliani being the Republican nominee a full year ahead of the convention. This is just months away from the general election. And I'm telling you, and it doesn't take a brain, I'm not making any big claim here. That campaign that Romney ran and the entire approach taken by the Republican Party and the conservatives, whatever the hell they call themselves, man, you couldn't have stunk it up more. Are you kidding me? How do you take a country that you claim is dissatisfied with Obama and you claim is there's a groundswell against Obama and you claim this, and you guys can't put a candidate up against Obama? This guy's not going to get arrested. I don't know how much he's going to lose by, but he's going to lose. I'll tell you what the problem is. People don't dislike Obama near as much as you think they should or do. That's number one. Number two is, whatever little revolution was going on in your heads about how bad Obama was doing and about how this and that and something else, whatever you think was happening, man, it wasn't happening. And number three, and finally, the whole birther thing and, you know, is he born in Kenya and is he a Muslim? You couldn't have asked for a worse approach to Obama than that stupid, silly garbage. Because what happens is this. The mainstream voter is not that dumb. I understand that maybe you think he is, but he's not. The mainstream voter wasn't buying into Obama is from Kenya, and they weren't buying into he's a Muslim. But because these fringe elements, like the right-wingers and the progressives, the same thing with the far left, because they live on the edge and they don't really have much current, you know, they don't do much business with normal human beings because they're always sitting around talking to each other, they don't know what normal people think. They don't know how normal people live. And they think, hey, you know, I got a great idea. What's that? Let's talk about him being a birther and all that. Let's talk about him not being born in America. And boy, that'll really... You know what it did? It sunk your ass. That's what it did. It sunk Romney. That and his other kooky ideas about women's rights, which that's a lot more dangerous. But you might have snuck through, even with the attitude that when it comes to Romney, he doesn't really have any opinions on abortion or any other issue relative to women. He likes to just sit back in, sit back in the high grass and wait and see what comes along. He's just waiting to see what's for dinner. He doesn't want to make any commitments. Well, that wasn't any good. that wasn't any good. That didn't help. The gay marriage thing, Obama came out, and you know, a lot of people might have thought Obama was committing some sort of political suicide when he said that gay people ought to be allowed to be married. But I got news for you. That's the way a lot of Americans are thinking these days, more and more and more and more. So when you sit back on your ass and you don't take a stand, or you take a, you know, a rather vague stand on these things, no longer is that a savvy political move. No longer is that considered to be, you know, smart. Let the other guy, give him enough rope, boom, boom, all that bull crap. No, no, that doesn't work anymore. This is 2012. That means that we are 4 years past 2008, and we're 12 years past 2000. I remember when it would have been an absolute, it would have been a disaster for a guy to come out and say that gay people ought to be allowed to be married. The President of the United States said that. Obama's going to get reelected.
Yeah, I don't think so.
That you, I don't care, bud, what you think. He's going to get reelected. He's going to get reelected. I'm going to vote for him.
Why, man? You said you'd vote for Romney.
I thought that maybe the country needed the kind of economic conservative conservatism that was being advocated, but all, the rest of the Romney package is so rotten. Stinks so much, I couldn't bring myself to vote for that guy. Okay? He's another one. He's an old school Republican when it comes to a lot of that stuff. And I put a lot of stock in human rights, and that's just all there is to that. I'll go ahead and roll the dice and take my chances with 4 more years of President Obama and whatever cockamamie economic policies he wants to put forward. Frankly, I believe in national health care. I do. I support that. The rest of the kind of liberal approach to money, I don't, but I do support the social agenda, and that's important to me, so that's where it's going to be, all right?
Yeah, but everybody's saying the country's going broke and everything.
The country's been going broke since I was born. The country's been going broke since I was born. The greatest president of the last 40 or 50 years, so we are led to believe, is Ronald Reagan, and he did nothing but deficit spend. Nothing but deficit spend. I remember when he was running for president and that guy, John Anderson, was a third party candidate. He was running against Mondale or whoever the hell. No, it was Carter and it was Reagan. And Anderson said in one of these TV debates, he said, "Who are you guys kidding? How are you going to pay for all of the stuff that you say you want to pay for?" Well, guess what? They went into hock. So, you know, I don't know what this guy's got to do between now and November, but he better come up with something big. I don't know what it is. He's going to have to put his head on straight, and he's going to have to start taking some stands on a few things. I don't know. You know, I think it's too late, personally.
What about that guy, Ryan?
Who cares, man? But you talk about the biggest zero announcement I've... This, hey, Paul Ryan, well, that's great. I'm sure he's great, and everybody likes him, and I, you know, fine. I saw him, I saw Ryan during some of those debates on the economy. You know, he's a very engaging guy. I'm sure his credentials are just solid when it comes to conservative beliefs. That's what they sweat over there in the Republican Party. They sweat whether the guy's credentials are really, you know, this or that. Look, if the cat's a Republican, I'm going to assume that he has a certain approach to life, the economy, social issues, et cetera, so on and so forth. I'm going to just go ahead and I'll give you that, okay? So the fact that over there on the Republican side of things, they sweat out whether a guy's, you know, well, is he going to be acceptable to the conservative base? You guys worrying about that has gotten you beat. It'll get you beat 2 elections in a row, sweating out the conservative base or the conservative this or that and what they think. No one cares, man, except them. No one cares. Over there in the Democratic Party, they go, you got liberals and you got Democrats. And sometimes they're the same thing, but sometimes they're not. That's what they ought to be worrying about over there with the Republicans. Who gives a damn, man? Occasionally you're going to have the one and the same conservative and a Republican, and sometimes you're not. And this conservative thing hasn't gotten you guys to first base, man. It hadn't helped you at all. If anything, it's gotten you sunk. It's got you sunk this year. You're going to lose this election because of that dumbass Trump and that birther thing. And that whole bullcrap with Muslimness, it makes you look stupid, okay? Do you understand? Do you understand it makes you look stupid?
Man, I tell you, we're going to get some email of people on this.
I don't care. Care if we get email? Every time I hear somebody say Obama's a Muslim, they may be kidding. They could be kidding. But people think they're serious. And when people think you're serious, then they think you're an idiot. And they don't want to have nothing to do with you. They're going to go ahead and they'll vote for Obama. Why the hell am I going to vote for some guy who thinks Obama is a Muslim? Well, I mean, Romney doesn't think that. Doesn't make any difference, man. Those people support him. I want nothing to do with them.
I think a lot of people are kidding that he's a Muslim.
They may well be kidding, but here's the problem. Nobody knows it. No one gets it. No one gets the joke. As a result, people think they're crazy. And the same thing with that birth certificate thing. I told you that. Some dumbass, and I was talking to some guy on my in the comments section on our website, and he said, yeah, I knew, you know, you were so stupid, you thought that Trump was going to be, was serious about his run for president. That wasn't the point, man. That wasn't the point. The point was this. When Trump started talking about the economy, I said, hey, oh, you know what, we got to take a break.
Is that what Trump said?
No, we have to take a break. When he said, when he started talking about the economy, then we'll take a break. I said, okay, but guess what, man? The cat's making some good points, but as soon as he started in on that birther thing, forget it. I don't care whether he was serious or not. If he was serious, he still wasn't going to be elected president. All right, we're coming back on a world-famous Phil Hendry show. More on the... I think we've probably talked enough about the Olympics, like, not at all. And well, we got some other news here to get to, folks, including the story here on Google and Samsung and this lawsuit having to do with their software. The world-famous Phil Hendry show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show. You're listening to the world famous Phil Hendry Show.
All right, welcome back here on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show. And as we do most nights, and we forgot to do it last night, we go to our front page. We have 100 years of the New York Times front pages. This is August the 11th, and I had Dan pick a year out. What, bud?
I don't think it was a good year.
I thought it was a great year. 1964 he picked out. Is that the year you were born, Dan? Probably. All right, so that's your birth year. All right, so we're going to look at August the 11th of 1964. Now, the only problem I'm having is August 11th, for whatever reason, is not popping up. I'll have to scroll through it. But if you are looking at home on your Phil TV in HD, here is August 10. And Turkish jets hit Cyprus anew. UN and Johnson ask a truce. Soviet bids some kind of raids. There was something going on between Turkey and Cyprus, I guess. Greek Cypriots put casualties at 300, warn of reprisals. Turkish aircraft struck against Greek Cypriot positions today. Was the president of Cyprus warned Turkey that unless the raids ended, Greek Cypriots would launch full-scale indiscriminate assaults against Turkish Cypriot villages. So there was an ethnic problem going on there on Cyprus. Turkey is hostile to the Turkish bids. So Turkey and Greece had a beef? Man, why did I not know that?
What's that about?
I don't know.
Pretty funny, Turkey and Greece.
Yeah, that's real funny, man. God.
Well.
All right, here's the 11th. This is the year that Dan wanted me to look at. This is August the 11th, 1964. Kennedy and Wagner address Bar Association. Whatever. That was Robert Kennedy. Cyprus and Turkey agree to UN ceasefire. So it was Cyprus and Turkey. Pope proclaims readiness to aid keeping peace. So that was the big story, huh? How come I don't know nothing about that?
I don't know.
Turkey and Cyprus. McKeon to urge Kennedy to make race for... So Kennedy was going to run for... And this was 1964. So keep in mind, just months before, his brother had been assassinated. So now he's wondering... Am I going to leave the cabinet? He was the attorney general. And should I not instead become a senator of the United States Senate? Now, here's a headline here that I think is interesting. This is from the 11th of August, 1964. It says here, whites here plan a school boycott. 250,000 may be held out on opening day in protest of integration policies. The Parents and Taxpayers Coordinating Council met last night to draft plans for a massive white boycott of public schools here on opening day, September the 14th. When they say here, they mean New York City. The meeting held at a bowling alley in Brooklyn ended shortly before 1 a.m., but officials declined to confirm that a boycott had been voted for. Mrs. Rosemary Gunning, the executive secretary of the council, said a news conference would be held at 11 a.m. Frederick Royce, Queens PAT leader, declared in a statement released to the press while the meeting was in progress that this development is necessary as a very sad commentary on the state of affairs of our city. Mayor Wagner and his political cronies, by refusing to listen to the voice of the people or to consult with representatives of the majority of the people, have made it necessary for the PAT to take this step. The proposed boycott would protest the Board of Education's integration plan scheduled to take effect on opening day. PAT charges that this plan, which calls for the pairing of four predominantly Negro schools with four predominantly white schools, will force the transfer of 25,000 children from their neighborhoods. So what this is, folks, and it's kind of interesting, it was 1964, was it 48 years ago, on this day, were the beginning stages in New York City of what was called busing. And busing was it was ill-conceived in a lot of ways, because what it did is it took kids away from their schools and put them in other schools. I'm not saying, you know, that integration of schools was not necessary, and of course we have that today, but this was the integration of schools by way of taking children far away from homes and introducing children not from those neighborhoods, and it caused all of this freak out by people having to do with the how far away their kids are going to be, plus all these strange kids, i.e. black kids and white kids, into these schools. But it was a court-ordered thing, because they said that the separate but equal was obviously unconstitutional, and these schools in the inner cities were just garbage cans, and the really good schools outside of those cities, which were predominantly white, were really good schools. And so black kids were not getting an equal opportunity at education, and so therefore something had to be done, and so the courts came in and made this big ruling, and bang, here comes this busing thing, and man.
Yeah, but that what else are you going to do?
I mean, you're right. What else were you going to do? You can't say, well, you know, you should have an equal opportunity. Public education should be equal for every kid. Okay, but you're going to need to wait a while we build better schools for you. Because, well, now hold the phone, man. What do you mean I got to wait a while? Well, we just, you know, we don't have the schools yet for you. And, well, here's a better idea. Why don't we get to go to those schools? Those are really good schools. Well, yeah, sure they are. But, I mean, they're filled up with white kids. We want our... So you can see the argument and how it developed. And I don't know what the solution could have been. What it has ultimately come to be, you know, what it's ultimately come to is that we now have public schools where children are, you know, from different ethnic groups. We've had a burgeoning black middle class where they're closer to these schools, better schools. As far as the inner city goes, if you will, they still suck.
The schools do.
Yeah, the schools still, you know, bite. All right, we're coming right back on a world famous Phil Hendry show with more from the year 1964. I'm kidding. Actually, we've got some sports news. Tiger Woods is in the thick of it in a golf tournament. Not in the thick of anything else, just a golf tournament. We'll talk about that and more on the world-famous Phil Hendry Show.
Phil Hendry.
Let me get the gentleman on the phone, find out what his name is. Hey, sir, how are you?
Yes, hello, Phil. I heard you speak of Cyprus during the break, and I thought I could lend perhaps some background for you.
And what is your name, sir?
Carlos. Mark Carlos.
Mark?
No, their first name is Makaros.
Okay, and are you from Cyprus?
No, I'm from Greece, but we left Cyprus, and we had moved to Cyprus, my father's business, long years ago, and resettled in the United States. But I've had the occasion to revisit Cyprus. And
I hear it's very beautiful there, right?
Oh, it's lovely, a part of the world, and I encourage people to visit it when they get a chance. But that was where my home was, and I've been there for a number of years before my father relocated, you know. But we had moved there, you know, from Greece.
Were you there when this Turkish attack took place?
No, I was not there. We had left before. But we'd had relatives who had been there, and they would write us letters and tell us what this is going on and that is going on, and the very terrible, the deprivation. People in the hospital, my aunt was working at a hospital in Cyprus when the Turkish jets come over, you know.
Uh-huh.
And they had to lay the wounded on the tables and on the blankets on the floor, and there were young soldiers that were killed, and it was very bad.
I had no idea. And what was the argument about?
I don't know. The Cypriotic government was essentially supported by Greece. We had the Cyprus Orthodox Church, and there was the Greek Orthodox Church, you know, and the Turks were Muslim, and they had the Russian Orthodox Church, too. And all of them could not finish the job, couldn't get it done, to get the job done, the Orthodox Church, you know. Now, when I came to America, the first thing I did was I left the Orthodox Church, and I joined what I thought would be better, the Episcopalian, and I found out it's the same thing that I used to make the joke, they don't have beards, you know?
You were Orthodox? What kind of Orthodox Church?
Well, I was a Greek Orthodox Church, but they also had the Cyprus Orthodox Church.
Okay.
And then the Russian Orthodox Church. But I left the Cyprus. My father left Cyprus to form the family to come to America. I'd had it with the Cyprus, with the Orthodox Church, because there's so many of them, you know, and I became Episcopalian. And my first day at the Episcopalian Church, we went to the service, and I said to my mother, these guys look like they're Orthodox. She said, you're right. And we got up, we had to leave, you know. And she said, well, let's try the Catholic, the same thing. The Anglican, the same thing.
But all of those churches, Orthodox, Anglican, and they're all kind of from the same, they're all splintered off from the Catholic Church.
Well, yes, but so is the Protestant. But I couldn't believe the bad luck we had. They left the Orthodox Church only to come to America and become Episcopalian.
Episcopalian?
Episcopalian, but Episcopalian was what we nicknamed it. You know, because it felt like we always are the hind end, you know, every time we tried to join a religion. So we called it Episcopalian, but...
But you don't know anything about the beef between Cyprus and Turkey.
Well, it was an ethnic problem, and the Turkish Cypriot and the Greek Cypriot were going back and forth, and we were Greek. But I never had any beef with them. I never had any problem with the Turkish people, but... Unfortunately, there was some serious beef and a lot of gang fights and a lot of bar fights, and no one got along with anyone. I went to a Turkish Cypriot wedding, and a big fist fight bust out. So the Turks, I think a soldier got beat up, and one of the politicians came over for a wedding, got beat up in a bar fight, and that's when the Turks came in.
But you're telling me the Turkish came in and bombed with jets after one of their politicians got beat up in a bar fight?
That's what I'm telling you. You know, I don't know what to tell you.
Well, I can't believe that. I know that it was ethnic. God knows there are so many problems in this world having to do with people's background.
Well, that was it. You know, you Turks and Greeks are very different. And then you mix in a different religion, you know.
Are they Muslim there, the Turkish Cypriot?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah, sure. They're different.
There is difference night and day. You don't even believe it until you live. If you live in Old Cyprus and you look at the Turkish Cypriot, you can't make head or tail out of them. The way they do things, the way they play, the sports they play, they've got a weird way of approaching football, you know. They play it barefoot. They wear, like to wear these Sulu, which is very similar to a Fijian Sulu. It's almost like a kilt that they wear, barefoot and a kilt, and that's how they play football.
Who?
The Turk. I told you, the Turkish Cypriot.
So there's a real cultural divide. Well, no wonder, you know.
Yeah.
All right, thank you very much.
Okay, thanks, Phil.
I thank you very much.
Who was that?
I don't know.
Who was it?
Well, it was my uncle.
Your uncle, Charlie?
Yeah. Well, I mean...
You mean what?
He said he had a Turkish voice.
That ain't no Turkish voice. I don't know what that was. Well, I don't know what... Anyway, getting back to the news.
Sorry.
Yeah. The wind blew them backward one by one. Birdies giving way to bogey. Was all that bullcrap then about that?
Well, I mean, you're talking about how I was Episcopalian. You should have figured that one out.
Yeah. Oh, I should have figured that one out. My show and the work I'm doing here should not be a process of trying to figure out whether you screened somebody right, bud. You let that guy go on the air knowing that it was a fake?
No, I figured it out halfway through.
You didn't know that was your uncle?
No.
The wind blew them backward one by one, birdies giving way to bogeys, pars giving way to double bogeys, and worse. If the second round of the 94th PGA Championship at Kiawah's Ocean Course were an Olympic event, it would be synchronized suffering. The judges had plenty to consider, not including the round of the day by the 49-year-old Vijay Singh, a 3-under par 69 in the morning that put him at 4-under and in a tie at the top with Tiger Woods, a 71. And first-round leader Carl Peterson, 74. Ian Poulter was a shot back after a 1-under 71. It was a tough, tough day, said Woods, who had the lead alone until three-putting 18 for a bogey. He took crazy start lines off the tees to accommodate drift in the wind, he said. But that strategy extended to the putting surfaces, too. So they had all kinds of wind out there at the PGA, and Tiger Woods is leading as they go into round three. Might be interesting, man, if the weather stays kind of weird.
How's he doing now?
Tiger, I don't know how Tiger's doing. I heard he's been up and down. You know, who knows, man? There's no question that that whole episode having to do with the wife and the thing and the... Oh, boy, that was bad, man. Bad for his public image, bad for everything else. The Chinese economy on Friday showed worrisome signs of slowing down, a development that not only threatens global economic growth, but also may complicate the relationship between China and the United States because they're going to devalue their currency, which makes their exports more affordable and makes America's imports more expensive. And that's the Chinese doing what they do, you know. Apparently... China reported that its exports, a critical driver of economy activity, grew by only 1% in July, far below the 11% rate. Ah, who cares?
Yeah, who cares about what the Chinese doing?
It only has to do with, like, the economy. This is just news I'm giving you, man, as we go into the weekend. So you know what it is that we're leaving behind us, so we'll go in and enjoy ourselves this weekend. And I am going to go and get one of those tents, finally, and put it up on the beach.
Why?
Because I'm going to do that, man. I see all these people going out to the beach with these tents and these cool little... I mean, they're setting up a regular house out there. Why not?
What are people doing that for? You look like you're some kind of old lady or something.
Let me tell you why people are doing that, bud. People are going out on the beach and setting up those tents because they don't want to get the skin cancer. You see what I'm saying? People are not... You know, this isn't the way it used to be where everybody's laying out there waiting to get... You know, 18,000 shades of mahogany or nut brown or whatever you guys like to do.
Now, what do you mean me? I'm already black. Yeah, but I do.
Well, good for you. You going to get cancer?
I hope not.
You'll hope not. That ain't going to keep you from getting cancer. People are going out and enjoying the beach now, but they're not laying out there like a dumbass waiting to get sunburned like a freaking lobster. So what they're doing is they're going out there, they're setting up those covers, those big umbrellas, those tents, whatever the hell they're doing. And, you know, they got the babies with them and all that stuff, you know?
What?
The people that are out there, they got babies.
Oh, yeah, like the little, yeah.
Yeah, like a little, you know what a baby is, right?
Oh, I don't know what you were talking about.
I'm talking about babies. And they don't want to have to, you know, worry about the little baby getting sunburned and all that stuff. So they've got like a real cool setup where they have the little tent. And I don't know what the hell they got in there, man. They can keep it cool in there and the kid can lay in, whatever, you know. So you're coming in out of the sun. So you go outside, you go in the water, you come back in, boom, ba-boom, ba-boom, ba-boom. That's what people are doing. This is the latest thing now, going to the beach, because this third-degree sunburn stuff and laying out and getting what you think is a tan. Man, some of these people with these tans, I don't know if they know just how bad they look.
Yeah, man, you don't have a tan. You still look bad.
Well, that's just me. What do you mean I don't have a tan? I don't have a tan and I still look bad. He's right. All right. Well, I mean, I look okay for a guy without a tan. We'll be right back. World famous Phil Hendry Show, our news and information hour. And we're online at philhendryshow.com. We've got news about the Curiosity rover, which apparently took a photograph of the reconnaissance vehicle, the delivery vehicle. It took a photograph of that vehicle crash landing on Mars. It didn't know it was going to take a picture. It just so happened it synchronized at the moment that that thing crashed. Anyway, we'll explain it till we come back. The world famous Phil Hendry Show.
Truth is our bitch. The Phil Hendry Show.
It's the Phil Hendry Show.
All right, welcome back here to the Phil Hendry Show. A few minutes left in this here week. Man, what a week, too.
Man, you bust your ass this week.
Yeah, I'll say.
Thank you, guys, for acknowledging that. I did bust my ass this week. Well, what else is new, man? All right. However, it is Saturday, and we're going to celebrate this Saturday morning just as soon as we get up. We're celebrating this Saturday morning. Right now, we're on the air. I love it, man, because I got this story here about this Mars rover. This is a beautiful thing, man. This whole Mars thing has just been a marvelous, it's been a nice break, you know?
Yeah, I think it's been fun talking about, you know,
people were saying, you know, outer space, space travel, all jazz is like passe and...
Yeah, they're saying that no one cares no more about it.
Yeah, but they were saying it's kind of boring. I got to tell you, man, of all the news that we've been getting this summer about all kinds of stuff, this has been a nice break, man, from all this other jazz. Look at this. This is the United States of America putting another craft on another planet. I mean, this is a country did this. And it was great hearing from the flight directors there at JPL, all those young people, men and women, who sound so positive and so proud. And also, we're talking a lot about how they realize that it's their baby. You know, they represent the country. They got to take care of this for the nation, for the country, and make sure that it, you know, that everything goes off without a hitch. The Mars rover Curiosity took a photo of a crash landing. A review of landing data confirms that a photo taken by the Mars rover happened to capture Curiosity's spacecraft crash landing in the distance. An extraordinary coincidence. All right, now what does this mean? It doesn't mean that Curiosity crash landed. This was the delivery vehicle.
The one that it was on?
Yeah, see, images taken by the Curiosity rover on Mars show a plume of dust which had disappeared when another photo was snapped 45 minutes later. Engineers say the plume indicates the crash landing of the spacecraft that delivered the rover to the Martian surface. NASA drivers await chance to operate biggest, baddest Mars rover. What is it? Okay. The final seconds of Curiosity's eight-month-plus journey to Mars called for a spacecraft to lower the rover to the surface using a sky crane, three ropes. The ropes were then cut, and the last of the spacecraft, known as the descent stage, cast itself toward the horizon. It crash-landed on purpose about 2,000 feet away, so it's about a half a mile away.
What does that mean?
It means that the descent craft, or that craft that was carrying rover, lowered it by way of three ropes. That sounds kind of whack. And then the ropes are cut so that the Curiosity lands, and then the spacecraft, known as the descent stage, because there had been another stage that had already separated, quote, cast itself towards the horizon. I guess it just fired some some sort of rockets or fired some sort of propulsion rockets and sent itself spinning off in as far away a direction as it could, crash landing 2,000 feet away. A low-resolution photograph that Curiosity took seconds after landing on Sunday night arrived promptly at La Cañada Flint Ridge Jet Propulsion Laboratory, managing the $2.5 billion mission. The photograph captured a pyramid-shaped blotch on the horizon. The same photo, taken 45 minutes later with the same camera, showed the same view of the Martian landscape, but no blotch. Die-hard space fans took to the Internet, raising the possibility that the blotch was an image of the spacecraft crashing, an extraordinary coincidence considering the potential variables and the fact that the shutter was open for only 200 milliseconds. We expected it to kick up quite a bit of dust, said Steve Sell, a member of Curiosity's entry, descent, and landing team. Still, the chances of photographing the crash landing were, quote, insane, end quote, one engineer said. On Friday, JPL reported that an examination of the massive data Curiosity had sent home regarding its elaborate landing sequence showed that the photo did capture the crash landing into the surface. I saw a picture of it, and it's you can look for it, guys. It's literally all it is just a blurry little boop, you know.
Is there fire and everything?
No, there's not going to be fire, man, because there's no oxygen, you know. Am I right about that?
Well, I mean, a little bit.
There's some kind of atmosphere, right?
Yeah, they're the atmosphere, but I don't know how much is oxygen or anything.
Well, anyway, no, there wasn't a fire, but it was just a crash. It was just a, you know, crash landing. The spacecraft that had deposited the rover on Mars took about 20 seconds to arc across the sky and crash at about 100 miles per hour. The photo was taken about 40 seconds after landing, but it appears that the tremendous impact sent up a cascade of Martian soil that was still hanging in the air when Curiosity snapped the photo. That could be due in part to the fact that Mars' gravity is 38% as strong as that on Earth.
What's that mean?
It means if you throw a bunch of dust up into the air, it's going to take longer for it to settle down. Many had dismissed the plume as dirt on the camera lens. I remember when they said that, too. They said on Sunday night when we were watching it, they said, well, some of the photographs are difficult because we've got an awful lot of dust that's been kicked up by the actual landing of the Curiosity. And that's true. This plume of dust that was from the crash landing of that descent stage, they thought was part of what Rover had... did I say Rover?
Yeah, or Fido?
Don't get smart, okay?
What was it called?
Called Curiosity.
You called it Rover.
Yeah, hey.
Yeah, Rover.
All right. The Curiosity Rover is what I meant. Anyway, that possibility, both images picked up the same blotch. That eliminated the possibility the lens was simply dirty and confirmed Sell said the artifact was real. We believe we've caught what is the descent stage impacting on the Martian soil. We're fairly certain it's the impact plume. Also on Friday, engineers offered their most detailed assessment of Curiosity's landing. The craft, they said, landed roughly 1.5 miles away from its predicted touchdown zone. That's pretty damn good. Not bad, given that the site was more than 150 million miles away, and the projected landing zone was an ellipse 12 miles wide. Sell said, we flew it right down the middle. How much time we got, man? Not much. Next up for Rover is a four-day brain transplant. Engineers will be updating Curiosity software, currently primed for its flight stage, to prepare it for its Martian surface operations. The update will add two crucial functions, the ability to use the geochemistry lab sampling system and to drive. You know, with the success of these Rover craft, okay, and these robot ships, do we need to send manned missions?
Yeah, you do.
Well, I know we do eventually. You know, eventually you want to send men, but all of this stuff that's being done now is so thorough. I don't know, what could a human mission accomplish?
Yeah, they want to set up like a Mars colony and have people live there and how, you know, they're going to build a house and everything.
Yeah, and what about they have, you know, like a lady and everything?
Yeah, they want to have make babies.
Yeah, the Mars colony thing, man, is way off, okay. Speaking of being way off, that's where we're going. The world-famous Phil Henry Show is produced by Dan Northcraft and me, Phil Henry. And for a, you know, live streaming video, as well as all of our archives of the world-famous Phil Henry Show, do join us, won't you, at philhenryshow.com. For Dan Northcraft, Bud Dickman, and Robert Leonard, until Monday, let that be a lesson to you. Good night.
Phil Henry.